very first poetry session at the MA in Writing with the tutor Eva Burke took place while Seamus Healy was being buried. And I said then that if I was ever lucky enough to be invited to venues like this, that I would always recite a Seamus Healy poem to begin with. So we feel he was here with us. When all the others were away at Mass, when all the others were away at Mass, I was all hers as we peeled potatoes. They broke the silence, let fall one by one like soldier weeping off the soldering iron. Cold comfort set between us, things to share, gleaming in a bucket of clean water, and again let fall little pleasant splashes from each other's work would bring us to our senses. So when the parish priest at her bedside went hammer and tongs at the prayers for the dying, and some were responding and some were crying, I remembered her head bent towards my head, her breath in mine, our fluent dipping knives never closer the whole rest of our lives. Thank you.
Oh Lord, I'm falling apart here. This is a piece.
Can everybody hear me fine, yeah? This is a piece called Spindlewood. It was published in Gropes 2014. A very nice anthology out of Inuit Galway, put together by the MA in publishing. Spindlewood. I was their unnatural child, transplanted without roots, and they grew me there in three rooms under thatch with a flat roof at the back, where they harvested the rainwater for washing. Generations of cats slept on wide windowsills beside lace curtains or under the Stanleyan baskets that she lined with remnants from stitching. A suck lamb was bottle fed in the scullery where the Wellingtons got left on the faded check lino. She had roses that twisted around pillars and up gable walls. Bastards for pruning, he said. But she said, how else would they reach up and climb if they didn't have thorns for fingers? His hands would bleed when he pruned the nude stems in the springtime. My iron bed was piled high with heavy blankets, a hot water jar under a pink eiderdown, and the smell of paraffin oil that was like lavender at bedtime. She'd make supper from nothing, a slice of toast, a kipper, or a piece of tart that I had a hand in. They told tales of fairies and ghosts to frighten and delight me, and by the light of the tiddy lamp, their stories enlightened me. The mehel came with the thresher and perched themselves on seats around the small kitchen table. Strong men and lads with vests on. Voices, hoarse from tossing and pitching, throats dry from the chaff, were wetted with pots of strong tea or sometimes black porter. They made tall cocks of straw and tied them down in the haggard. They bagged the oats from a chute, and I shouted at rats from the at a safe distance from the stile near the gate in the orchard. When I was 8, a boy came and I asked him to marry me there on the fourth rung. Our brown legs hung down. He said he would, and then we sucked black curtains from a canister. After she died, A cold-hearted bitch told me I was her natural niece. I lied with confidence, said I knew all along because they had grafted me securely onto their branches. I thrived in their light and I now live in that house I was reared in. I have roses that twist around pillars and up gable walls, and my fingers bleed in the springtime. But her roses are worth it. Thank you. About 2 years ago, a woman called Anne Corliss uncovered, a historian in Tuam, uncovered a child's burial place. You couldn't call it a burial ground, it's a burial place. And near a convent, a place where women from all over the west of Ireland were sent when they were, in trouble. There was a lot of controversy and it got a lot of media attention for a lot of good reason. But I was at home one day in the garden and the radio was on in the shed, and I wouldn't be a Joe Duffy fan, but there were all these, seemed to be a lot of men calling in about wanting to find their mothers. And if there's one thing I know, it's rural Galway women of a certain age, of all ages actually, my own age and older. And I was thinking, there's probably some woman, you know, 15 or 20 or 30 years older than me, and this is the last thing she ever wants to hear, is that there will be an inquiry and she'll potentially be linked to a child that she abandoned. And so I wrote this to and about that kind of a woman. And I wrote it very quickly, because I don't know why, but and I was grateful that it came quickly. And I sent it into the Galway Review and they published it that night. And it got picked up by the Irish Echo. I actually got to read it on a radio station in Boston. I call it To a Tuam Mother. Are you living alone in a Tymon or Athenry, listening to Joe Duffy in private? Or are you confined again in a communal place, in a nursing home, or on a hospital gurney where you can't get away from the news? Are you afraid today, like you were when you were a slip of a girl and the God-feared and guilt-driven parents or the curers sent you to Tuam from Top McConnell or Turlough Moor, so as not to lay blame, but to make the shame go away? And they did. They hid you and then they hid him. And now you hear talk on the wireless of an official inquiry. Will it bring into the light and what's left of your life? The 60-year-old unmentionable child that you've never forgotten, or sometimes, to be honest, you have, but you've told no one. Not your husband or sister or the subsequent daughters your almost virginal body bore. Are you 80 and afraid today? Will names be named and will you be ashamed again? Thank you. They're a bit heavy now, sorry, but I like them. I like saying them. There's a field beside us where I live, and the travelling community have been renting it for a few years. And so I've gotten to know them, and it's been interesting and mutually beneficial. When they first started renting the field, our neighbours, one of my neighbours is a guard, and he was like, lock the fucking sheds now, they'll rob all before them, they'll bring everything out of the yard. And sure, they haven't at all. But anyway, it's meant that I've gotten to know the wider travelling community. And the piece I'm going to say for you came from an encounter with a traveller woman. But, and the piece I will write sometime. I was going out to Portumna, which is about 20 miles from where we live, and there was a traveller woman hitching in Climber. And they're cute, you know, they'd have the measure of you in a minute. And so I had on a pair of shorts and runners, and I had the dog in the back of the car, and I pulled in, and she was like, "You're going to Portumna?" "Yeah." "You won't be long, you have the dog." "No, I won't be long." So she said, "You won't be delaying, you have the dog." "That's right," I said. "Well, I could run into Aldi quick and you could pick me up and bring me back in the way out." My day was organised. Anyway, so, "What's your name?" "Margaret Sweeney," she said. "Your own, Anne-Marie Kennedy. And where do you live?" "Crumple." I said, "Do you know the Dunhoos?" So the Dunhoos are the family that rent the land near me. And she said, "Why wouldn't I? Sure, my husband is a first cousin of that lad and a second cousin of this, and they're all related." So straight away I was, you know, endeared to her. So, and she told me she was 50. She volunteered that very quickly, and then that she used to live in Loughrea. "And how many children have you?" "12. "And would you name them?" So she named them Maureen and Bridie and John Paul and Sean and blah. And then she said, "Larry and Rose together." I said, "Oh, you said Larry and Rose together." She said, "Yeah, they're twins." And I said, "Oh, and did you know when you were carrying them, that you, when you were pregnant, like, that you were having twins?" "I did not," she said. So it turned out that they lived in Loughrea at the time, and Portiuncla, the hospital that she went to, would be 21 miles from Loughrea. And I said, "How did you find out?" She said, "Well, I was well over, ma'am." And I went down to the doctor in Ballinasloe, and he said, "You're not having one, you're having two." And I said, "God, did you get an awful fright?" "I did," she said. "I nearly fell off the bike on the way home." I wrote this after meeting this other little woman, and it won the Galway Rape Crisis Centre fundraising flash fiction competition. We let these people get a drink, will we? Carry on. So anyway, this won that competition, €500, thanks very much, it was lovely, and I called it No Fixed Boat, based on a true encounter. She looked small and frail, the opposite of me, I thought, when I spotted her, sheltering under the white thorn on the Athenry Road. She put out a reluctant thumb. "Thanks for stopping, ma'am. I goes out to the brothers to kill the time. Killing the time is hard in the town, but I don't like the country. I'm too old for the road, but don't give me a halt in sight. I don't like safety belts either. Could I just pull it around me in case the guards stop us? And I don't like the guards at all. The women are the worst. Where are you from yourself now?" "Menla," I said, "in North Galway." "I think I was born near there, somewhere along the side of the road, sure. But I don't know the year. Would you know to look at me what age I am? Would I be 70? I'd love to know, ma'am." She said she was deaf in one ear from a belting she got from the husband. She was married at 15, the father made the match. "And you're a married woman yourself. Are you happy with him?" "I was never happy married, ma'am." "Yes, I'm very happy, actually." "And does he like you?" "Sure, he loves me." "Like and love. Them's two different things altogether, and faith and as well, I know that." I dropped her at the brothers' caravan. She leaned the good ear and the damp, musty ponytail in my window. "Nellie Ward, they calls me. I'll say a prayer for you. Would you have any old clothes? I'd say you were around the same width and girth as myself. Thank you." I'm going to finish with this. That's my... Can I do two more, Paul?
Yes.
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 I had...
So when Paul and I talked about me coming down here to do this, I said, I'm not a poet, please don't call me a poet. I think it's... anyway, it's hard to know what poetry is. But I got published in The Shop, the very last one, and I was delighted with that, and so I think that's a poem. Well, that's why I say it. Again, I'm looking around at the age demographic, and you're all very young, but you're also very attentive, and I think you like the poetry. But my theme, thank you. My themes are probably hit a different age. Anyway, it's fine. I call this The Bastard Master. The two-room school he ruled is closed now and deathly quiet. Not a sound, except from the creaking door, swollen into the frame like the little palms he swelled and the fingers he blistered with a sally rod or an ash plant. Hold it out straight, a hane, a doe, a tree, keep it out straight, I said. The stick whistled when he sliced the air from high up, down over a small child. He'd plant three welts on the left and draw his breath, the right one next, and if that child flinched or pulled a reddened hand, you'd get six of the best for that, the mad bastard master said. Arish, agus Arish, Ella, I'll redden your arse next, aber on Mo Conilach. He'd be frothing, the eyes bulging, hopping the rod off the blackboard for rhythm, the dust rising, chalk flying, chest out, the lungs full for the shouting out of the bad bastard master. Me and another big girl in sixth class brought the small girls to the outside toilet, and when they'd wet themselves with fear, we'd wipe them. His own daughter Evelyn did it once too often for his liking in high infants. I met her in Shop Street last year, the fear still there in the wary eyes. I heard myself ask how he was. Still alive anyway, she said. Well, as far as I know, I don't go home much. Haven't seen him for years, not since Mam died. He's in a nursing home. Got someone to write me letters, but I only read the first one, burnt the rest of them. Seems he hates it there and they all hate him too. But I don't care. I've me own troubles, as you can see, the state of me. But I'm getting help now. The new doctor said he might have to die first for the therapy to work right for me. Mm-hmm. Will you tell your sister I was asking for her? I remember you were nice to me. Thank you, guys. I lived in America for years and came home about 8 years ago. And, sorry, I should say my thank yous first. Yeah, this is my last piece. Thank you very much, Paul. Like, it really is very nice to be here. And as Sean said, you know, this place and this, the concept and what you do here, and I couldn't talk to you beforehand because I'm always nervous, but we can talk after. This place has a beautiful and, you know, sustained reputation because of you and Sue and whoever else helps you make it happen every Monday. Like, fair play to whoever it is, you're great. You know, and we just take care of writers, nice. We're staying in a B&B. It's a I've gotten 10 short stories since I arrived there. My God.
That's the way you do it.
Yeah. You know, the houses were... Anyway, I'm very grateful, and I'm not making a laugh of them, but everybody, the street we're on, everybody enters the house from the back, and every house has this beautiful sloping drive down to a closed gate with the best view of Cork City, but nobody looks out there. I think that's funny. It just really subverts everything to do with feng shui. But thank you, Paul. Oh my God, lovely. And it's a pleasure to read with Sean. I didn't know how I'd follow that, but anyway, beautiful work. This is a piece that's very close to my heart. Like I said, we lived in America, and every time you'd leave home and say goodbye to aging parents, you'd be just like, oh God, is this the last time? And I was very lucky that that's not what happened, and I got home in time for my father's passing, and it wasn't all sad, if you can believe that. Like, we had some laughs as well in the week that he was dying. This was broadcast on Sunday the 17th, it's also published in the Galway Review. And nice for writers out there, do you know about the Galway Review? You can talk to me after, yeah. Submit to it, like, they're very, very good. I call this Time Enough. It all started on Saturday when you didn't go to Mass. You got a right wallop on Sunday, that's what you called it. On Monday, the ticker went completely out of kilter, and only then did you let them call the doctor and me in the middle of the night in Boulder, Colorado. My small sister sounded brave on the phone, and I was afraid of the words she was saying, doctor's words and nurse's phrases about the heart, about your heart in particular. Mam said to come home as quick as I could and to try not to worry on the way. She said she knew your heart well, and she knew for sure it would wait for me. 5,000 miles crying like a child on Tuesday. Denver, Chicago, Shannon. The air miles, the road miles, the roadworks in Gort, never ending, and I alone, it terrified you'd be cold when I'd kiss you, but you weren't. You were warm, frail, and fatherly. Dry your eyes up, Egerline, time enough for that. Isn't it great you got home safe and sound and sitting here beside me? Now tell me about the flight. Was it Aer Lingus? What was the captain like? How was the landing? How did he handle her coming down? Did you get a glimpse of the black cliffs along the coast of the County Clare? In and out of a coma you went on Wednesday, and we went daft from lack of sleep, non-stop cups of tea and bourbon cream biscuits. On Thursday you wanted jelly and ice cream. A nice nun said she'd make it, but then we couldn't make you. Don't worry, it wasn't wasted. When I got her back turned, I ate it. On Friday we thought you were gone, but then the cousins came. The big lads, you used to call them. Tall, grown men, awkward and shuffling. Mad about you, never took their eyes off you. No touching though. Just small talk about parts for vintage tractors and how there was a book brake broken and you were going to weld it. You smiled from your sleep at that, and they were delighted. They made round bales around your bed. They brought in oats and barley. They footed the turf, told you the weight of the wainlands at the mart and what the dry cattle meant for, and who'd be the first to hear the cuckoo that year. Simple things they knew you'd like to hear being said near you. They said they were staying the night then, told me to go to bed, all matter of fact, but then you sat up. What age am I at all? 87, Daddy, I said, you'll be 88 in 2 weeks. Wouldn't that be some number, lads? Wouldn't it be great to see it? Only round the corner. I think I'll hang on for that. But your number was up, as you'd say yourself. You'd say it came up with the dawning. Thanks very much.